Nedarim Perek Zayin Mishnah Aleph 7:1, and the topic of this chapter are nedarim, vows, which restrict a wife in various ways, and that vow is in place thanks to the husband, it's his fault. And the question is such a vow grounds for divorce, and under what scenario, under what circumstances? So to understand the whole perek, we need to do a quick review of how nedarim work. A neder, a vow, is when an object is forbidden to a person. The prohibition goes on the object, and it says that object is forbidden to the person as if it were like sacrificial meat, totally forbidden. Which means that a neder can really take one of two forms. It can either be, I could say that your pen is forbidden to me, meaning I can't get benefit from your pen, and that pen is as if it were sacrificial meat. And the other possibility is I could say that my pen is forbidden to you as if it were a korban. And then again, since it's my pen, you can't get benefit from it. What I cannot do is say that your pen is forbidden to you. Since it's not my pen, and you could do what you please, and I have no authority to restrict you, so there's no way to make such a neder. So therefore, that means that although the wife in these scenarios is going to be restricted by some neder, there's no way for a husband, to directly say, you know, you're not allowed to eat cherry pie. That just wouldn't work. What he could say is that you're not allowed to eat any of my cherry pie, and that would be binding. Okay, the structure again would be, my cherry pie is forbidden to you as if it were a korban. Okay, so now we'll have to understand all the Mishnayos in this chapter as being legally binding nadarim that meet that basic structure of a person restricting some benefit to himself or something that he owns to somebody else. The truth is, however, that there are two ways that a husband could indirectly restrict his wife through a neder. One way is, if a person would say, let's say I say, I'm forbidden from getting benefit from you. So then, if I make you the object, which is forbidden to me, so then that would be a binding neder. and while in the case of a husband and wife, if you would make such a neder, it actually wouldn't... It wouldn't be binding in as much as she has a shibud on his body, on his person. He couldn't say, like, you know, sleeping together is forbidden by force of a neder, in which I say getting physical benefit from you is forbidden to me, because she has such a claim. She has a right to that. But we'll see in the Mishnah here, there is a way he can do it on other things. The other way that a person could indirectly restrict someone else through a neder is in the case of a husband and wife, since the husband is authorized to be mayfair, to annul his wife's vows on the day that he hears about them. So if she makes a vow and says, I'm not eating any cherry pie, and the structure, she takes a formal vow, she says, cherry pie is forbidden to me as a korban. The husband who hears that could say, no, you're not restricted from eating cherry pie, I'm annulling that vow. But if he doesn't, so then he essentially is a mekayem, he upholds the vow, and therefore she becomes forbidden from eating that cherry pie. And since that cherry pie is restricted to her because of him, because he could have annulled it, so we're saying indirectly it's as if he did it. So we'll see in the Mishnahs that follow cases like that. Okay, but our first case here is actually, the case is sounds straightforward enough. The truth is there's like a whole world of technicalities to make this Mishnah really work out and make sense legally. But before I let you into that, I'll say the gist of the Mishnah, and then we'll go back and talk about all the technicalities involved. So the gist of the Mishnah says, Hamader es ishto melahanos lo, if a man takes a neder by which he says that a woman can't get his wife can't get benefit from him, so he won't give her any food anymore. So then, ad shloshim yom yamid parnas, if the neder is just covering just a 30-day period, so then he can establish someone else to feed her, and it's going to work, yasser mekain, but if the period of that vow extends beyond 30 days, then Yotzi v'itzen ksuba, then he has to divorce her and give her a ksuba. Rabbi Yehuda is going to argue and say that the time frame is a little longer when it comes to the wife of a Kohen, because Rabbi Yehuda is concerned, and he'll be concerned about this in the next mission as well, when it comes to a husband and wife where he is a Yisrael, so he could essentially remarry his wife after divorcing her, so it's not totally final by having a divorce. Whereas a Kohen who divorces his wife, she becomes a Grusha, he can never remarry her. And that being the case, Rabbi Yehuda wants more time and special rules to apply to Kohanim. And therefore he says, be Yisrael, when it comes to the husband being a Yisrael, a non-Kohen, Chodesh Echad Yikayem, yeah, 1 month it could go on for. There's a machlokas actually in the Gemara, if he's arguing this point, if 1 month means maybe 29 days in such a month as opposed to 30, put that aside. Ushnayim, but if it goes into the second month, Yotzi Vitzen Ksuba, once it goes beyond the first month, he has to divorce her. V'kohenes, but if she's the wife of a Kohen, oftentimes Kohenes refers to the daughter of a Kohen, here it for sure means the wife of a Kohen, of course. So Shnayim Yikayem, this can go on for 2 months, Ushlosha, or even 3 months, but at the end of the third month, then Yotzi Vitzen Ksuba, if it's more than 3 months, he would have to divorce her. That's the gist of the Mishnah. Now, let's go back and discuss a number of technical points. The first is, I said that a man who takes a neder that, let's say he says that that sleeping with you is forbidden to, the benefit of sleeping with you is forbidden to me. So that's not going to work because she has a reciprocal right of sleeping with him and he has no power to stop that. Okay, so that wouldn't work. She has a shibud on his guf. But when it comes to feeding her, it's not quite the same. Although he has an obligation to feed her, remember, there was a quid pro quo in which he is providing with mazonos, food, and she was in exchange giving her masiyadeh, her labor output. But really, if she could work and feed herself, so then that could work. And therefore, if he would make a neder that he won't feed her, things can still provide with food, I should say. So then it could still work out that he takes a neder that all my food is forbidden to you. And she can, and so he can, that can be upheld. He won't give her any of his food, but she can still be fed and he won't be hungry. She won't be hungry, go hungry. And her obligation of mazonos will still not, you know, be totally ruined to the point that they have to get divorced because she can work and that work can pay for her own food. Therefore, it could work out technically. Now, if that's true, so the Mishnah says, if you read further, Hamadir is Ishtu Melahanos Lo, a man takes a vow that she won't get benefit from his, let's say, food. So Ad Shloshim Yom, for up to 30 days, Ya'amid Parnas, he can establish someone to provide her with food. Now, someone's not stringing together, says the Gemara, because if he's providing her with a third party to give her food, so then he's doing the food provisioning, and therefore it's not about her masiyadeh. So what's going on over here? So the case is more complex. It has to be where? The rule is when she was living with her in her father's home, so they were richer people, and they would spend, for argument's sake, $30 on a dinner, and that was like the kind of dinner she was accustomed to. Now she married this new husband. The husband's not as wealthy as her father, and therefore he only could spend $20 a meal on for dinner. So now the rule is that ola imo ve'eno yuredes imo, that she is to be maintained at a material, you know, stature, status that is the greater of how she was in her father's house or in her husband's house. So if the husband's rich, she has to get a higher standard of living. If the father have been richer, the husband is required to keep her at her old standard of living like she had when she was with her father. Notwithstanding that, if they eat together, so she eats whatever he eats, so even though he's eating $20 meals, that's okay. He can feed her just $20 meals, and that's, you know, that's acceptable, even though she was used to having $30 meals. But now, if he's not eating with her, he's just saying she's on her own, so then she's entitled to get $30 meals. And now if, let's say, hypothetically, her masiyadeh, her labor, can only enable her to purchase $20 meals. That's the budget she could afford if she's paying for them herself with her own work. That means he, the husband, has to supplement the extra 10 to make sure she has a full $30 meal, like she was used to in her father's house, and which she's entitled to under the principle of ola imo ve'eno yuredesimo. She has to be provided for at the standard of living that she had before. That being the case, the husband, although his neder could stand and he won't be providing with food because she can have her masiyadeh, her own output can provide for her, still he needs to ensure that she gets now the higher standard of living, the extra $10. How will he do that? He has to get a third party to provide it to her. But he certainly can't appoint like a shaliach. He can't tell somebody, you know, you should give my wife this extra money, this extra food. That will never work because shlucha shaladun kamoso, it's like him doing it. If he would tell someone to give this wife the extra food, it's like him doing it himself, violation of the nether, and therefore it had to be a scenario where he didn't instruct anybody specifically. He just said, you know, around the poker table with his buddies, he says, whoever provides for my wife won't lose out. You know, he's not telling one particular person to go provide for her. He just says, guys, my wife needs food, and whoever provides it for her, I'll sort you out later. So he sorts things out, so therefore he didn't make that person who's providing the parnas, the person who's providing the wife with the food, he didn't give a specific instruction to, and therefore it's not considered a shaliach, and therefore it's not him doing it. That's the case of our Mishnah. So the Mishnah says that can go on for up to 30 days. Why? Because it's really humiliating for the wife to now sort of be exiled from her husband. If it was a short-term thing, it's reconcilable. If it's more than 30 days, people will find out about it. It's humiliating, and it sort of makes the marriage irreconcilable. We don't want that to happen to the poor wife, to be sort of humiliated like that. And therefore, if it's more than 30 days, then it's grounds for divorce. That's what the Mishnah says here. One more time, I'll show you, read inside to you. Hamadiras ishto melahanos lo. A man who takes a vow that his stuff won't benefit her, meaning his food. Ad shloshim yom, if it's up to 30 days, yam in parnas. He could establish a third party to provide for the extra food she needs, if that's the scenario we need to provide for. Yasser mekin, but more than 30 days, yotzi v'iten ksuba. He divorces her and gives her her ksuba. Grounds for divorce. Now the truth is, by the way, that this expression yotzi v'iten ksuba, divorce her and give her a ksuba, is used in a number of Mishnayos throughout the Masechta, and it's a machlokas in the Rishonim what that exactly that means. Doesn't mean it's grounds for divorce, which means that she could take him to Bezin and say, I want a divorce, and the Bezin would say, yeah, you just give your wife what to get, and he's supposed to listen. Or does it really mean that they force him to divorce her? And the difference is, essentially, if they use words to tell him, you know, we really should do this, or if they use sticks and they basically beat him to a pulp until he says, yes, I'm going to divorce my wife. So the first being just, you know, telling him to, the second actually forcing him to. So that's a machlokas Rishonim, exactly what this means over here, but be that as it may, the point is that more than 30 days is humiliating for the wife to the point that she doesn't have to put up with it anymore, and now it's grounds for divorce. Just note again, we had said in previous Mishnayos that a person could feed a husband, feed his wife through a third party. The Rambam Paskin, that's permitted to do, you know, at least from every Shabbos to every Shabbos, but not eat with her. And more than that, we saw that things like the sailor could be away for 6 months at a stretch, and that's sort of tenable as a marriage. The point here is that that's just how their marriage was. But him, by taking such a vow against her, clearly he doesn't like her anymore, and she's humiliated, and it feels terrible, and therefore the marriage is, you know, not a marriage anymore. She's embarrassed, and she doesn't put up with it, and therefore it's grounds for divorce. Rabbi Yehuda is going to say, well, a little different. Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Bi Yisrael Chodesh Echad, he says, if it comes to a non-Kohen wife, 1 month is acceptable, and again, perhaps 1 month means even 29 days is the max, Yikayem, then he'll stay together. And that he can continue, he, the husband, can continue to feed the wife through the parnas, etc. Ushnayim, but if it's 2 months, that's too much, and therefore yotzi v'tein ksuba, he has to divorce her, give her ksuba, even at the beginning of the second month. So, okay, either like, let's call it 31 days, even maybe 30. Uvakohenes, when it comes to the wife of a Kohen, shnayim yikayem, ushlosha, it could be for 2 months or even 3 months like this, we're not going to force a divorce yet, but more than that, more than 3 months, yotzi v'tein ksuba, then he'll be forced to give her a divorce and give her a ksuba as well because she did nothing wrong. It's his fault. You just note, by the way, last thing, that the Mishnah uses, it's not exactly consistent the way Rabbi Yehuda talks. The din is clear. For a Kohen, it's 3 months, up three months and more than that is no good. And for Yisrael, it's 3 months and more than that's no good. But the words of the Mishnah just don't read exactly like that. Well, that's the pshat. The words of the Mishnah just want to point out to you. It says, so one, yes, keep, and two, already divorced, meaning the beginning of the second month. But then he says, two, keep, and three, go out. But here it means three, not the beginning of the third, but the end of the third month. That's the pshat in the Mishnah. Halacha, however, is not like Rabbi Yehuda at all, like the Tanakama, which means that it's no difference between a Kohen and a non-Kohen, but 30 days would be the maximum in this scenario that a woman would have to put up with.